Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Thank you, my sisters, for joining me today for Black Women Talking Back podcast. Today, we are going to talk about the movie of the year, Sinners, by Ryan Coogler. And we're going to just have some fun talking about the characters, the women characters in this movie. What we saw, what we didn't see, what we wanted to see, the things that inspired us and intrigued us, and of course, the things that we questioned. So thank you. Sit back and relax. Enjoy this time with us on the Black Women Talking Back podcast. We already did all that. All of that. Sorry, I did all that while you earlier today.
Got it.
Yeah. And so here they are, the Sinners women, Pearline and Mama and Mary and Annie and Grace and Therese. So let us begin. I want to first ask the question I want to start with. How many times have you seen the movie? And what excites you about having this conversation today?
I can start. Regrettably, I've only seen it twice. Those are pretty low numbers for such a fantastic movie. I'm already figuring out when I can see it next. What I'm most excited to talk about, I'm really curious to hear just your thoughts on certain characters' decisions, and perhaps what you all would have done differently. But otherwise, really excited to dive in. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you, Alethea.
Hi, this is Zoe Flowers. Happy to be here. Like you, Alethea, I've only seen it twice. I wanted to see it on the, I think the 74 millimeter version, but they didn't have it in the city that I live in. So I've only seen it twice and not even on IMAX.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Em. Also very happy to be here and discuss this movie. It seems funny to say I've only seen a movie three times in the theater, but it only three times. Really excited to see it again. I've seen the 70 millimeter, but not the IMAX version yet. And what excites me about discussing the women characters is every time that I discuss this movie, I just get more and more out of it. And because I would like to see it again, would love to take the wisdom and insights from this conversation into my next viewing.
Thank you. So I've seen the movie four times. I'm looking forward to my fifth. I almost made my fifth yesterday, but my shoulders started bothering me. And, that was the end of that pain pill and lay down. But yes, four times, and four times is just not enough. I cry through each one of them. I'm excited about this conversation today. I'm excited for so many reasons. First of all, I'm just excited. I'm having a podcast and we're talking about a movie. I'm already just excited.
Yes.
Just about that.
Yes.
Yes. But I'm excited because it gives us opportunity. This is Black Women Talking Back, and this is an opportunity for Black women to talk about Black women in media, in film. And especially a film that is created by one of our geniuses, our own geniuses, because I live here in Oakland, And so, yeah, I just think it's a phenomenal opportunity, and I'm really excited. I know all of these women on the podcast today are very opinionated, and so I'm looking forward to hearing their opinions and being entertained by the conversation. So, I want us to be free, just like we were sitting around the table having coffee, tea, or a cocktail. And so we can jump all over the place. We can also talk across each other. I don't have a problem with that. And you can jump on any prompt at any time you like. And so I'll take us to the next prompt, but from that point on, we're just free flowing and going wherever the spirit leads us in this conversation. So let's start with what was your initial thought and feeling when you saw Sinners the first time?
I can answer that, and it's not that deep. I went in, I would thought I was watching a vampire movie. So I remember just being really stunned, almost in the mindset of, I wasn't ready to see something this rich, and beautiful. My feeling was that I need to watch this again.
Yes.
I can go next. I can definitely echo that. Also didn't know what I was walking into. I think I must have missed that Michael B. Jordan was even a twin playing himself in the movie, so that was a shock. But it was very much the same energy as after seeing Get Out when it came out in 2016, just that electric charge in the air. I've never seen anything like that before, especially just this work of art made for us by us. It had that same feel to it, but completely different. And again, like you, Em, I need to see that again.
Yeah, same here. Definitely shock, awe. So excited. I am definitely a person who grew up on horror films and but had backed away from them for a while. And I did not know anything about the movie. Did not know it was coming out. And one of my homegirls called and was like, "You gotta go see this movie. It's set in, the year that it's set in." And I was like, "What is it gonna be? Is it the same old?" And she was like, "Just go see it. I'm not telling you anything." And when I saw it, I was like, I didn't even want to speak. I just wanted to like let everything like soak in because there was just so much. So yeah, I was very happy and excited.
I'd seen, I think, two or three advertisements of the movie. And so it was two things I was clear about. Cooler, good music, and vampires. I was like, that's a winner for me. I'm going. And so I went with a few friends the first time, but even that expectation was not high enough. I was still completely outdone, mesmerized. I don't think I have words. I've had this question for a few days. I should have had been ready for this. I didn't have words though for what I saw and what I experienced. I just don't have the only word that always keeps coming back to me is beautiful. It's beautiful. I felt like, and still, that I have never seen anything so beautiful. Even with the vamp, and I'm a vampire fan. So when I saw it was gonna, I was like, oh, I called my daughter right away. Like, oh my God. Black movie vampires.
I
She was
remember
like,
going
no.
back one
Yeah.
day.
And she's like, no, mommy, I think it's zombies. I'm like, no, I think they're vampires. And so I was just excited about that because I am a lover of vampire movies. But the last thing I expected and couldn't expect was the amount of beauty
Yeah.
in that movie. the spirit and artistry that comes forth in the movie. And so you can't hit, all I wanted to do was rewind. I was like, how do we see this again? How do I stay in this seat and we rewind this and see it again? So yeah, so that was my initial thoughts were just, I want to see it again. And I had no expectation. It was so much beauty. So much beauty. I'm lying. I didn't almost. I felt like, to be honest, I wished I had seen it by myself. That I wanted to take it all in without anyone around me, no other noise, distraction, no anything, to just sit in it alone.
Have you seen it by yourself yet?
I have not. I thought I was going to do that yesterday, but it's coming. It's coming. TD would say, it's coming. It's coming. So overall, what do you think about the roles and the diversity of the Southern women's stereotypes in the movie?
Well, I did have a question.
Yes.
Was it intentional, you leaving out the white woman Joan from this slide?
Oh yes.
Who's Joan? The
Exactly.
wife? Was it the wife?
Exactly.
Right, the one who opened the door
And let him
with
in.
the
I thought that was intentional because she was a white woman. We have women of color here, but so that's what I wanted to ask.
Oh no, wait a minute, wait a minute.
The
Who is Joan?
wife, the clan, the pig poor and clean.
Amazing.
Her.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, okay. Rightfully
Maybe
so.
I forgot. I don't know why I forgot her. I don't know how that happened.
She's forgettable. It's okay.
No, because I, first of all, when she starts singing the song, that scene, I'm like, she doesn't even look real. I mean, she embodied that moment. She looked like a real vampire. Like, I'm not a human being. And then when she touched Mary on the shoulder, I was like, oh my God. So yeah, she's definitely memorable, but I guess not memorable enough.
Yikes. Yikes. So you're saying stereotypes?
Southern women stereotypes. And because
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
The care in my opinion, the women all they all portrayed a Southern stereotype. And it'd be I'm interested, not that you can answer that question, but I'm interested in why those particular stereotypes were chosen, like Therese. I just wonder, but maybe if you all don't recognize the Southern stereotypes, if that's maybe that's just me and my own stuff, we can certainly not talk about it.
I would love to hear more about what you mean when you're using that term. I was thinking about them more as archetypes, I guess, if that makes more sense, but
I can get with that. I can get with that.
So I wish I could say archetypes. But for me, they seem more like stereotypes. And for me, they really seem like this is how a black man would envision women of that era. And I think that if a woman had designed the women characters for that era, I think they would have been different.
Interesting. Because you had asked the question about like what we would have liked to have seen, and I would have liked to have seen more background
Yes.
on Annie and like how she got to, but I'd love to talk archetypes, because I definitely think Mary's character definitely fit like the traditional tragic mulatto stereotype. It could be said that I don't want to get in trouble, but Annie, I mean, there could be some archetype stuff there as well. But I think that Wunmi brought more depth to what could be seen as like the magical, dark skin, voluptuous, witchy, woman. Whereas Mary has privilege, doesn't really follow, doesn't have feel like she has to follow societal norms, is okay with putting people in danger because of what she wanted, felt like she could go outside and like everything would be okay. So I definitely feel like that was like the archetypal like white woman in a movie who runs upstairs. Or always falls in the woods,
Yeah, so for me, that's more of a stereotype than an archetype. I think that's the way that they're always portrayed, and people expect them to be portrayed that way, rather than creating some new, not new in the world, but bringing forth a more rare and more realistic type of black woman from that period of time. Maybe.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say maybe. I mean, maybe she
Yeah.
had privilege, and that's just kind of goes along with the privilege. But anyway.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying is that, I think that that is a traditional character for the mulatto. It is a stereotype, in my mind. What would have been for me more of an archetype is if she had been different. If she'd have been a mulatto that I hadn't expected, that I don't traditionally see in movies, especially in black movies.
I think I was thinking of archetypes because, and this is something that I think women, black folks, queer folks have always had to do when consuming mainstream media is there's work that you have to do to find yourself or your stories in the roles. I can't remember the author, but there's this book called The Celluloid Closet. Being able for queer people to be able to read themselves into to stories, and I think that's something that because I felt so connected to this movie that I just kind of automatically jumped to and inserted backstories and motivations and things like that because we didn't get that from the movie. As mentioned in the bio, I am a very early student of the tarot, and so I think in me and my coach are working through like the major arcana, and one of the she wanted me to use the Fool's Journey as a way to tell a story. And the first thing that came to mind for me is I was like, I'm gonna talk about Annie's backstory, right? And then when I was also thinking about this question, again, my mind went to tarot, and I was like, is Annie high priestess or empress or for Mary? And this was not. I wasn't trying to make it racial, but I saw a lot of devil there, both, in terms of her the relationship that she had with the Stack character. And also, the devil card and the lover card are like, if you're looking at the Rider-Waite-Smith version of things, they're almost kind of like mirror images. So I think because I was doing that work that Coogler didn't do for us, and that a lot of times, we have to do on our own, I was able to see a bit more richness there. But I agree with you that I don't think it was present in the movie as written and created.
I love that you brought in the tarot because that I didn't think about it like that at all, but as you're saying that, I almost also feel like Mary is the tower because for me the tower crumbles because they didn't heed the warning of the prior cards, and so then the king and the queen are like kicked out of the tower. And it also represents the Tower of Babel. So I feel like, yeah, oh, I'm gonna, ooh, that's good. I'm gonna look at that differently now. And I think I like Annie being the high priestess. I like that. I also don't mind Mary being like the Queen of Cups reversed. I
Queen
like
of
her as the
Cups
devil
is
too, though.
tell us about the Queen of Cups so we can so I can be on the same page.
Let him do it.
Oh, the Queen of Cups. Okay.
Reversed.
I feel, Zoe, you have so much wisdom and an experience in this area, but I'm gonna make an attempt because I haven't my coach and I haven't gotten real deep into the Queen of Cups. But when I think of Queen of Cups reversed, I guess the first thing that comes to mind for me is she, there is so much. I do think that she really is like truly in love with Stack, but it's very needy and it's almost vampiric before she even gets turned. And if she were a friend of mine, I would say, okay, this man married you to another man. He, loved you and left you. When he saw you get off the train, he, tried to pretend he didn't know you. And so, but you forced this, right? You were trying to, make this connection really, really work. And she was able to eventually get what she wanted, right? But it ended up, being in a twisted fashion. So that's my like
Yeah,
novice
I
stab
dig
at it.
it.
Would love to hear more from, Zoe and Alethea, your thoughts on that.
I agree with you. I feel like that's it, right? The cups is emotions, and the emotions just like just ruled everything, right? Just swallowed everything, just smothered everything, and just overran logic and against societal norms and expectations and ways of being. Yeah. And that makes me think, yikes, I've been married. Like, since you said it like that, I'm like, oh God, that was me in my 20s and maybe 30s.
Yes, when one of the things Elise asked us to think about is, who we identify with
Yeah.
most. And Annie is aspirational for me, and I know I've been married in the past. Absolutely.
Course. Yeah, and maybe Pearlene getting busy in the back of a, maybe not a juke joint, but maybe somewhere else inappropriate that I shouldn't have been.
Honestly, now I'm just sitting here thinking of like the different suits of the tarot for the other women as well. Like, yeah, I definitely agree about Mary being related to the cups. And now I'm thinking of Pearlene being suited for the wands, just like how she's very much the sexual and fiery and passionate nature. And Annie's she could be swords for sure. She was very like she was very observant, very to the point.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Direct. The person you could rely on. And I definitely see Grace as Pentacles because she was about making that money. That's kind of like kind of her motives for it.
She
For
was.
yeah, she was about making that money. And her family being
And
about, you know,
family.
their
And
business, yeah, family and their business. Just that material wealth and that connection. But yeah, I agree with everything that both of you have said about Mary for sure. Like she the days of being, you know, ruled by your emotions.
And Grace was the first one to throw the fire too, so that also feels very like an empress energy. I'm going to protect what's mine. I'm going to protect my family. I'm going to make the Molotov cocktail and I'm going to throw it and I'm going to let the vampires in.
At least you didn't know you were doing a tarot podcast. Here we
Just
go.
turned into a tarot class. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Funny. So Grace, talk about stereotypes. So Grace for me went from, in my mind, a stereotype of an Asian woman to somehow embodying a stereotype of a Black woman. To me, that attitude that came out when she realized, oh, shiggity, he is speaking my tongue. He is somehow connected into my husband's mind. And he's talking about going to get my daughter. And she was like, to hell with everybody. I'm gonna go out here and kick some ass and I'm gonna make it. I'm gonna make it. Even though I know it's a bunch of vampires out there, I'm gonna kick some ass and I'm gonna make it. I was like, and for me, that scene is like, I see more of a Black woman with that attitude than the Asian woman in terms of stereotypes. I felt like she moved from they set her free from being the sweet business, taking care of business, matter of fact, to I'm a badass and I'll take all these Mickey Fickies out. To me, she made that transition. The character made that transition. I was su so surprised when it to me it even seemed like her chest went up and out more. I mean, it seemed like she just took on this whole nother force to me, which seemed more like the stereotype of a Black woman in a movie, in a movie.
I didn't think she was ever sweet. I mean, she was definitely the one that was like haggling back and forth about the money. She didn't want to go in the first place, really. She kind of always seemed like she was a little suspicious of the whole enterprise. And I think they talked about her child. and the whole town. So.
Yeah, I thought that even when, like, when she in the business transaction, well, starting with two people shot outside, got to be connected to you. So even though, so she comes in like, hey, I ain't scared of nobody. But to me, she still took the very sweet approach through it all. I'm not scared of nobody. Okay, but you have money and you need these things, and we're gonna work this all out. And so she came down from you're in town and you starting shit to, okay, let's work this all out. Okay. To me, that was, she went from the businesswoman to and maybe a little bit more docile to me. That wanting to make the business transactions overrode whatever initial feeling she had about, oh, you out here in this, first of all, you're back in town and you're out here shooting people on the first day. It seemed like she just made that transition from, I really came over here. Now that I see it's you, I'm really gonna get you out of my store, get you out, because you're a problem. You're bringing problems already. To, oh, okay, you need some stuff, and I can make that money. But it wasn't like I can make that money like Therese will make that money. To me, it was more, it was just more sweet, like it was more nice. Like, okay.
Didn't get that at all.
Me either.
Yeah.
I
Me
didn't get
either.
so, like, her whole aura to me was very much just stoic, and I feel like the soft side of her we really saw when she was dancing with her husband at the juke joint. Like, that moment, that's the sweet, well, if we're gonna use sweet, that's where I feel like that shone more. But I also feel like, going back to what you said about, or talking about stereotypes, I think that was the stereotype I feel like Coogler was offering to us, that we tend to perceive, especially, or women are, or Asian women are perceived as being docile and demure and very quiet and proper and all about making money, like especially within Black communities, when you think about the hair salons and the nail salons, who are they run by, and they have to present themselves in a particular way, and so, and they always have to be like really accommodating and nice to their customers. But here we saw her, like, you see the husband, he's super nice and super welcoming, like they've been their friends, buds. But here comes the wife, who's already upset being pulled from her register and having to walk over and see what's going on. Like, she's all about that business and making sure of taking, like you said, taking care of her family. And so I think, you know, it made sense. I think, yeah, I liked what you said about her, how her energy would reminded you of that of an angry Black woman, or just a Black woman, when they were threatening her family. But for me, in that moment, it was, it made sense. I know, and this is controversial take, it made sense that she was so angry, and that she took that risk opening that door, where just all those walls came down once her, you know, what she really cares about, her family, not so much the community, but her family, once that was threatened, like all of that was stripped away, and we saw the human underneath that. Which I feel like, again, is not an expression you see often publicly. Like, when you hear about Black people being killed by police officers or things like that, you know, we it's not we're gonna make some noise about it. But when you hear about, you know, the hate crimes against people in the Asian American community, like there isn't, we don't get to see that visible anger, that rage that I'm sure they're all feeling quietly, because there's still that expectation that they need to like be docile and demure, and to keep their heads down. Sorry, that was a bit of a tangent.
Yeah, I like it. I agree.
Yeah, I love Grace's character. And jumping to another question, I'm hoping she'll get supporting actress. So, you know, in mainstream movies, white women get supporting actress for one scene. For one scene. Black women or and Asian women, and I can't remember any Latinx women, but they have gotten supporting actress because they practically held up the whole movie. I mean, they were phenomenal throughout the movie. It wasn't this one scene where, people were impressed, but she was a powerful character throughout the movie. And I feel like Grace was that. I feel like Grace did both. I think she carried her character well, and when it was time for her to transform into this other character, so to speak, I think in those scenes in the when she's like trying to get out, she's ready to get out. I think she literally steals the show in that time. It's like, oh my God, the cameras. It's like the camera's on me. I gotta do my thing. I mean, she just became and for me, a very powerful actress in those scenes. And I'm hoping she'll be nominated for a supporting role. I'm sure it won't happen, but
Actually, if you don't mind, I want to think more about this choice that Grace made. If you're okay with that in Alethea's hot take.
You mean to sacrifice everybody else for her daughter?
What else would have happened?
Yeah.
And I haven't heard anyone yet actually defend her choice. And I'm not saying, 'cause now, that I think about it, it's like the trolley problem, right? Have you all heard of that? So it's this like classic problem in moral philosophy where there's a train that's headed towards 10 people and they can't get off the tracks. So if the train keeps going the way that it's going, they will be killed. Now you can pull a lever and it will train to change the direction of the train. There's only one person over there, but they can't move either. So do you let things run its course, or do you make a conscious decision that that person is going to live while, I'm sorry, that person is going to die by pulling the lever, so that you can save the other five people, right? We know what Grace chose. That one person was her daughter, right? But I can't shake the idea that everyone in that juke joint survives if she doesn't throw that Molotov cocktail. But then, I mean, she's a mom. Right? It's really an impossible choice.
And she also just saw like her husband, right,
James.
went to the car and then he come back and he talking about, oh yeah, baby, it's nothing. Oh, maybe he's hungry. Da-da-da.
He's
It's
just
like,
hungry.
well, clearly this is the love of her life. Then you've got Remick talking to her in her foreign tongue. Now you're threatening my daughter. I mean, I don't know who would just sit in the barn. What was they going to do in there? They had to come out to keep the movie going. There's no movie if Grace doesn't open the door.
Oh yeah, of
Yeah,
course.
so that's always my thing.
Of
Yeah.
course.
Yeah, there's no
There's no, nothing
It's
happens.
a very boring movie, yes.
Nothing happens. And the other part of it is they were in the almost near the same situation about 5 minutes earlier when they realized that Stack was alive and Smoke wanted to open the door. And he was getting ready to open the door. He's like, "That's my brother on the other side of the door. I'm going to open it." And of course, Annie's like, "Hold on, wait a minute." It took a lot. And that was just his brother who he had witnessed died. Which I think made more sense, where it's like, you're threatening my daughter who's still out there. Like, you're between me and my daughter, and my husband are like, I don't blame her. I don't blame her. No, and the whole movie for me is about choices and sacrifice and deals we make. And so, I mean, I've been listening to a lot of different podcasts with a lot of different people. And so there's been like various takes on the Grace thing. But yeah, I don't understand where, where's the difference between what Stack did and what Grace did, or what Stack tried to do, keeping his brother in, sticking his head it right by the it a hole in the wall. You just seen him dead. Now you, it's like a lot of decisions were made.
Yeah, and that is the catch for me. That is the catch 22, is that, if Grace didn't make the decision that she made, the movie would have been over. I mean, we'd have just sat there and watched and wait till dawn. That'd have been a boring movie.
And take the risk that they could have murdered the entire town.
That's true. Yeah, because that showdown happens. They all end up, or most of them end up perishing.
And then the other white people would have came and killed them.
And the Klan people would have came the next day, because the Klan people was on their way too. Justice for Grace. Justice for Grace. No grace.
I'm definitely, I'm definitely with Grace. If my it had been my child.
The only thing I didn't agree. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm so sorry.
No, I'd have been trying to find some way to get to my child, protect my child as well.
Makes sense.
And I don't think that I would have been thinking about everybody else.
Just like Stack wasn't, he wasn't thinking about,
His twin.
right.
His other half.
And then he didn't even kill him.
I wasn't supportive of that choice either.
You were?
I think that the right thing would have been for Smoke to sacrifice Stack. But again, the movie, when people make rational choices, and when I say rational, right, I mean like devoid of emotion or attachment or things like that. It does often lead to very boring results. So no, I get what y'all are saying, but it is something that I struggle with, her decision. And yeah, letting Stack live. How many people has he turned, in those many years between, when everything happens and the we get to the end scene. So I don't know. It's complicated.
Maybe they only got the KKK folk. They only got white racist
I hope. I hope.
Well, I've been thinking about this though. I listen, Remick's deal didn't sound too bad. Like I was thinking about this the other day. I'm like,
Alethea's not
con
lying.
is you're living forever. Like everybody you love is dying. Like that's the con. The pro is you get to stick around. I mean, the other con, I guess, is drinking blood or whatever. But I was thinking about that. I was like, is it a bad thing to be a vampire?
How much do you like the sun, Zoe?
Oh,
That's the key. Yeah,
shoot.
that
I
was the
do
only
love the
thing.
sun.
Yeah.
Oh, I love the sun. Oh, yeah.
I also am a huge fan of garlic.
Oh, I love garlic. Yeah. Oh, I guess that would be hard. Never. Unless you're a daywalker. Unless you're a daywalker.
Daywalker.
If
Yes,
you're a
and we
daywalker,
have those. Yes, we have.
you can be in the sun.
Well, this is the part, right, where choice is really important. We know Annie didn't. She was not about that life, right?
Right.
Whereas, I almost wonder if Mary. If they would have told her, you'll get to be with Stack forever.
It was no consent.
I think she would have been like, all right, sign me up. Sign me
I
up.
know. Because she knew she couldn't go to the ancestors and see her baby.
Oh no, I meant
No, she's
Simon
talking about
Mary. Sorry, I
Mary.
missed. Yeah,
Oh,
Mary and
Mary.
Seth.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
I don't think she had an opportunity to have the conversation, but I hear you. If that conversation had happened, would she
I
have
think so.
gone with, oh, hey, well, get it. Yeah. The thing I wonder most about Mary is what happened in her childhood? So her mother raises the boys, and I wonder if she felt some kind of way. I wonder if she experienced her mother differently than the boys experienced her mother. And if there was some desire, if the beginning of desire was when she realized the boys get more love and attention than I do. And if that was the beginning of her desiring to be someone else.
I really, the second time around, I really paid attention to the scene where when Mary was arguing with Stagg. I think it was at the, was it at the Jew or it was still the train station, and how she was, you know, how she just buried her mother the other day, and why didn't you send flowers for the funeral? And he said, you know, we, no, it was Smoke, I'm sorry, she was arguing with Smoke, and Smoke said, we sent her flowers, you know, for while she was still living, while she was still alive, like that mattered way more. And I just thought that was such an, that's an ongoing conversation that we do have about people, like after they pass, like why do we celebrate and honor them so much after they passed, and don't like devote that much energy while they're still with us and alive, like how things would be different. So I'm just wondering like how that would, that was reflective of the relationships that, you know, she had with the boys versus with her daughter, and just the resentment that she was feeling around that.
And I wonder if she's always resented them and loved them and loved Stack at the same time, that she resented the relationship that they had with her mom that she didn't have, and loved Stack at the same time. And maybe even that was the beginning of her desire for Stack, is to be with the one whom her mother adored.
Or her mother didn't want her to be with Stack and Smoke.
Yeah, I was a little pissed off about the fact that she didn't get, Stack was like, hey, I'm trying to protect your life and mine. I'm trying to stop you from getting killed by white folk, and I'm trying to stop them from killing me. And she didn't care nothing about that. I didn't want to be white. Come on now, let's deal with the reality though. The reality is, your biracial being puts you at risk all by itself with the white man. And then if the black man wants to be with you, puts him at risk as well. I mean, what kind of love is that that says, okay, well, we'll just take that risk. It's okay if we get killed. I just want to be with you.
Well, I think that just goes back to the archetypes. I think that,
Yeah.
again, it's just the Hollywood archetypes of Bonnie and Clyde. I mean, these are just like archetypes that Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor, like these are just archetypes that live from film to film to film to film that we see all the time, where we're just going to risk it all for love. I mean, a lot of people risk, like Pearlene, where's her husband?
And
Why
was she
did
married?
that? Was she
she
married?
married?
Yes.
And then she's with what appears to be a minor in the juice
Jeez.
joint.
Do you think he was? So, how old was he? Was he a minor?
He look about 16.
Well, I know he looked that old. I mean, he looked young, but I don't think he was that young. I could be wrong, but yeah, they did conveniently say, "I'm not that young."
He did say
He
that.
conveniently did not say how young he was in the movie. That was intentional, I'm sure.
I will say, as someone who used to work a lot with teenagers, the older you get, the that man could have easily been like 22.
Yeah, maybe.
There are 22-year-olds who look like that. They just look like babies to us.
Oh, he definitely looked quite young.
I want to believe, otherwise it's really going to mess with my head, that he was a consenting adult.
And I wonder about Perlene, who I really love. Of course, I love them all, but I wonder from the very beginning. Well, first of all, she sashayed away in that dress, and I was like, freeze, camera freeze. But I wondered if when he said that he'd seen her other places or somewhere else singing. I wondered if she really wasn't married, but that's what she says in order to protect herself or minimize the amount of people, men trying to pick her up, etc. If that's how she protects herself by claiming that she's married, to minimize some of that, and that she really wasn't married, but.
Because what husband will let his wife go out late at night in that time period, dressed like that?
Looking like that. I don't care what she had on.
Looking dressing.
Well, maybe he traveled. Maybe he wasn't around.
True.
I mean,
Maybe they had an open relationship.
yeah. Exactly. Right? I'm just like, yeah, I mean, that's a very loose and wild and lascivious time. I mean, we're talking prohibition, we're talking Al Capone. It's not like it's called sinners. She could have been married to some old crusty man.
Yeah, singing could be the way in which she took care of herself when he wasn't around. And I did kind of trip when she said, "Never mind, whatever. Sammy's in the room." I was like, "Did you just bond with Sammy just that quick, or is that a mother's protection?" I couldn't tell what that was when she said that. You know, was she feeling like, "Oh, the baby's in the room. The baby's in the room," or
I don't remember.
this sweetie I just made this magnificent connection with is in the room.
I don't remember.
Yeah, so when smoke shoots at Mary and Mary runs out of the room, and then they tell him to go out. They tell I forgot his name because I usually call him by his real name. But anyway, they tell homeboy the harmonica plays the harmonica to go out and close the door and keep the people outside.
Delta Slim?
Delta Slim. They tell Delta Slim to close the door and keep the people outside. And so, and this was right after the gunshots. And so then, I can't remember what people, I don't remember what people were saying, but everybody was all riled up and scared and stuff. And so, and she said, "Never mind, whatever that, never mind that. Sammy's in the room."
I think that was around, was it because he was still feeling guilty about what had happened? Sammy? Because I don't know, there was that period where he was all shaken up and he was feeling guilty about feeling it was his
Oh no,
fault.
they hadn't come out the room yet. So
But
this is still in the dying scene. This is when Annie goes into the room and Stack is, and Smoke is in the room and Sammy is in the room. And then Mary tries to run out, Smoke shoots at her, and then Annie tells, what's his name? Dale
Sammy
something.
Delroy Lindo.
Yes, Delroy tells Delroy to close the door and keep people out. And so people are now around the door and they're upset about the shooting. What's going on with the shooting? And somebody says, "Is the music, is the he Delroy says the party is over." And somebody says something about the music. Is the music gonna stop or the party, something like that, is gonna stop? And so she says, "Never mind that. Sammy's in the room." And I'm like, wow. and all this stuff that's going on, people getting shot and folk running out with blood on their face and all that stuff. And her immediate concern is for someone she just met, not herself.
Biblically met, though. Biblically met.
I mean, I think that's like just a classic movie, trope where you have this really underdeveloped female character who, falls in love with, the leading man and just suddenly is willing to give it all up for him. And if I'm honest, she's the character that I was the most dissatisfied with. And if I think I would maybe say she's more of a stereotype than an archetype, just because we just got so little, about her character. And to me, she did read as a Jezebel.
Yeah, you saying that is making me think of what would they call them now? Groupies nowadays. Because when we first see her, she is staring him down while he's performing. All in her eyes, how she wanted him and wanted to talk to him. Even though she was playing coy with him. And so it just reminds me of the women who lurk around, performers in the backstage, like waiting to speak with the artist. And sometimes older women, like especially when it comes to just these young artists and how they get preyed upon by these kind of women. I'm thinking of like,
What kind of women?
well,
Oh
Jezebels.
no.
I'm thinking like Justin Bieber and like all of the cases that are coming up about him and how he about his upbringing, because he was a child star, a child idol, and how all the women were just like flocking to him. And so there's definitely speculation about inappropriate relationships between him and older women, and of course artists who were supposed to be mentors for him. Anyway, but getting back to Pearlene, just she also has some sort of like predatory energy for me as well. Like I wasn't a huge fan of her either. Just with how she was approaching Sammy. And like, yeah, I don't think he was a minor, but I did feel like there was a bit of an age gap that made me a little bit uncomfortable. Again, we being called sinners, and perhaps she was unhappy in her own life and she hears a boy who's showing like mutual interest in her and she wanted to feel desired. And also felt desired for this person, but yeah, her energy was a little bit off too. But even though, yeah, like her sacrificing herself for him at the end was interesting as well.
And talking about like predatory, I mean, she was crawling on that stage. Like
Right.
there was definitely like a
The song.
carnivorous feline energy that was coming off of her in that moment. Would have learned a lot more about that character. People have talked about, there should be a sequel or anything like that. I don't know how I feel about that, but if there's some kind of, prequel that goes into
I like
ether, maybe
prequel.
has like a woman like writer or screenwriter or director, that's given us maybe a bit more like backstory or something. I would love to see that because I feel like, a lot of the women viewers we're doing that work and even having conversations like that. I would love to see something like that represented on the screen.
I feel like it goes without saying that I think the movie is the best thing since sliced bread. But I feel like all of the women's characters were underdeveloped. We got almost zero history of where they came from, how they got to the place that they were, what their values were. And it was so Now, it's, yes. So I get that I think that Coogler was taking the twins and saying the movie is about the twins. And I also want you to see how well this brother's playing the twins, playing two characters. And so, yeah, so everything honed in on who they were. We got backstory on them. We got their birth. We found out how they, when they were born, who they were born to, how the midwife, I mean, we got everything on them. Why they left, what they did when they left, why they came back, their history in the war. I mean, we got everything on their lives, but we got nothing. We got no backstory on any of the women.
But at the same time, it's like they all represented like really important turning points in the film too.
Yes.
They moved it
Yes.
forward.
Yeah. And I thought that was, I wrestled with that. I was like, how did he do that? The character just shows up. We know nothing about them, but then they become pivotal in how the movie moves forward. And so there is no movie without Annie. There is no movie without Grace. You know, they're instrumental in all of it. And yet we don't know who they are. At the same time, we don't know who they
But
are.
we do also at the same
I
time.
think we
Oh,
know who they
tell me,
are.
baby, how do we know? I know I make up stories about who some of them are, who I want them to be, but I really don't know who they are.
I think we know who they are.
Yeah, like I think Annie, we know her to be just like this fierce motherly figure who cares about her community, like her being a root worker, like that's very much important to her. Family's important to her. She's a romantic as well. Like she's loyal, dedicated, like she's incredibly smart. She's so intuitive and so observant. She keeps it like she's level-headed, like she's reliable, like she's so many of these things. She's forgiving. Like I feel like that's, we know who she is and what her archetype is. And like with Grace as well, family oriented, very much taking care of her family and her business. She's creative, she's artsy, like she made the signs for the party. Like she's still willing to help out others, even though it is, for money. She loves her husband, she loves her daughter. She's able to, she's not always stuck up because we do see her let go. For a little bit, and she's fierce, she's fiery, she's full of power and rage, like just that feminine rage that we see in her wanting to protect her daughter. And Pearlene, I think also we see she, at her as this very talented woman as well, who's not afraid of taking risks, who's also, led by her heart, also has a really deep affinity for music as well. She's very soft, very gentle, but she's sassy. She's very much all those things too. And she's also like, she hasn't known Sam for very long, but she gave up her life for him. Like, I feel like that says so much about her already, just the way that she was willing to do that for a complete stranger. And then Mary, while she may have had good intentions, she also like really loved her people. Like she would rather be with her people than put on this
Who are her people? The
mask.
blacks.
The black community that she grew up with.
Blacks. Okay. Those two. There's two. There's just
Not
who are
just the
the
two. People knew who she was at the Jew. She was known in the community. They said, Annie said, she's family.
Little
She's with
Mary.
us.
And I'm sure, again, I think she wanted to be, part of them.
She
I'm just
did.
like, but they're the ones who see us like, we know how it's really like, and so we can't be associated with you. So they wouldn't put her in the way she wanted to be in. She was ostracized. Caretaker, she took care of her mother up until her dying breath. She could have been one of those daughters that, was like, just, that could have been a different story. She's very passionate and she's very will, like strong will. She's very strong will. Like she did not back down once when it came to going back and forth with Stack. Like she was the one, even though Stack was always just very charismatic and easygoing and always good natured, she was the one person that can get him out of that state and get him into like into his emotions and into to let that vulnerable side of him out that we didn't get to see around anyone else besides maybe, his cousin and his brother. I can't say too much about the other two because they had like 2 seconds. But I feel like we did get to know. I know, I agree. I wish we got more backstory. But I think we got to know the women very well, despite, the little information we were given about them. Just
And
informative.
I don't feel like it was a story about the twins. I feel like it was Sammy's coming of age story. We started with Sammy, we ended with Sammy. Talk about the fool's journey. I mean, here he is. Again, it's like just the classic archetype, like Wizard of Oz, like he's met with this choice that he has to take. He meets allies along the way. He overcomes the big bad, and then he lives his life, right? It's like again, it's just like a so many archetypes in this movie, like classic Hollywood archetypes.
Hey, so do you identify with any particular character, and so why?
I did not. This is Zoe. I did not.
Okay. Him.
Yeah, I'd say what I said before. I definitely see Mary and my younger self, and would love to become an Annie, but I'm not there yet.
I
What's
would
up?
think, yeah, exactly the same. Been Mary. Find myself relating more to Annie, which was affirming just like her connection to the earth and just to root work was very enticing. And mirrors like my own desires, and especially when it came to the mojo bag that she gave Smoke, just that will to protect him, like all those years, I was just like, yes, that's exactly like part of why like I want to get into that kind of work is, my care for my people and making sure that they're good. So I just resonated like with her motivations, like her motivations were definitely relatable.
So,
What about you, Elise? I didn't mean to put you on the spot. You can answer that offline.
I think, even Mama, I mean, I love all of them. I love all of them. And I see little pieces of my life in every one of the characters. I'm like, been there, done that.
What do you all think? Because this is something that has really stuck in my mind. The vampires, I said they were very much about peace and love and community. But when Mary, like shortly after she turned, she said, very gleefully, "We're gonna kill every last one of you." Right. And I thought that was really interesting, and it was almost the most like directly like violent, threat that happened in the movie. And for her to be the one who said it, as opposed to any of the other characters.
I think it was appropriate that she was the one that had that line, because the killing was not so much, we're going to kill you dead, even though we do kill you dead, but we're going to make all of you vampires in here. And so that's the door that opens up, that gives her what she's always wanted, which is be part of that community. I'm about to make all y'all family. This party's about to get started the way I've always wanted to be. And so I don't think so much that's what she was saying when she said it, but I think it's appropriate that she's the one that gets to say, We're going to kill every one of you. We're going to make every one of you like me. We're going to all be the same.
Right. Which is kind of what Remick was saying as well. That was a part of his thing. But I felt like the vampires represented capitalism, white supremacy. That's kind of what I looked at. And so I kind of felt like that's what happens when you buy into white supremacy or the myth of white supremacy and capitalism and all those things, that you're not gonna escape it. Like, you make that choice, you make that sacrifice, you make that deal, and you're not gonna escape it. That's kind of how I looked at it.
Yeah, I think Cornbread really sold that the best with this little speech. Like, what is the point? Promise to get
Mm
along. It's a farce. It's just a farce for just more ways that, white people can continue, profiting off of you. And Remick's argument, because I've read some think pieces on it, just like how it's also an extension of like the dangers of assimilation as well, and how Remick is poses as that, and how similar to Get Out, like there's still that desire of the commodification of black bodies and stealing black bodies, because it's like I feel like ultimately Remick did not care at all about equality and being a family to take care of. He just wanted Remick, I'm sorry, he just wanted Sammy's gifts to use for his own selfish reasons. Like, that's all he cared about. Didn't see them as people at all. No, again, like I said earlier, like there was no consent anywhere here. And there's no consent involved with assimilation either. It's like you either get in or you get gone.
Yeah, I felt in the, you know, oh, in the end, the lens of this is all about racism and capitalism in a nutshell. And the consistent message of white culture that we're not worth anything except for whatever it is white culture decides they can commodify. And the ways in which we're lied to and fooled. Which is, I still think that, black people can always make something out of nothing, and that's what Stack did. But the reality is he's dead, his ass is dead. He of course he didn't raise his hand and say, "Make me a vampire," but he became a vampire, and he made it and then made it work for him. That's what we do. And it just for me, the same thing. It just felt like this is like a snapshot of America, of black people in America, and white supremacy.
Yeah, and imperialism. Colonization and how that's has vampiric essences of themselves too, just sucking dry other nations and their peoples and their resources, and then again forcing that assimilation, conversion religiously, politically, just all of it. Because yeah, don't you want democracy? I just think about what they did to, most of Latin America under the guise of, don't you want to be like us? Again, no consent involved whatsoever, and just complete decimations and disappearances and killings. And, yeah.
So Mama, let's have, I just gotta, what happened to Mama? Why is Mama so insignificant? I mean, we see her washing clothes. She can tell she has a wonderful relationship with her son. They laugh and joke about important things. Did you get your work done? Don't put that stuff on your skin. So, it to me it was obvious that they had a great relationship. But then, the next time we see her husband is telling her to sit down. Her son walks in the door half dead. And when she gets ready to run for him, the husband tells her to sit down, and she does.
Well, I mean, it's very reflective of the patriarchy we get with Christianity. So I think she was exactly who she was supposed to be.
I just wonder why they chose, that to me is back to the stereotype. Why did they choose her to be like that?
Well, what did you want? Like, yeah, and I don't think it was a stereotype. I think that there's a million of mamas right now. I just watched a podcast of a woman who's married to a preacher who said she used to iron his clothes when he would go cheat. Like,
Oh,
just
goodness gracious.
last week. Yeah, it's a huge podcast where the husband was like, she's my purpose, but she wasn't my preference. And they're just laughing and giggling. And she's like, you young girls, you're single because you won't do the things that I did. I think it's just an accurate reflection. I don't think, no lies told.
I'm trying to remember the genre of of books, not genre, but it's a term to, like, to denote a, like, when mystical or magical things happen and people just take them as like being normal. It's like magical
Magical
surrealism or
realism.
something like that. Yeah, magical realism. And so it's like, I feel like, because you might remember the conversation you and I had, Mom, about, like, if you could ask that question, you can also ask, well, damn, why did everybody have to die at the end? Like, why did it still have to come back to the real history of these white people were going to pull up on them and slaughter all of them? Which, like, this is still very much a, I feel like, a historical, like, documentary of this particular subset or this region in history. And so it's like Coogler still was making sure that we saw that the real history of, like, the lie that people lived during this time and what it looks like, what it felt like, and how we found joy and community despite that. So I guess to your point, it's like, yeah, it would have been like, if you're going to ask that, then you would have to change all the characters and be a completely different movie. But I think this is the movie that Coogler wanted to make. He was just adding the lore of, let's make it a vampire flick because that's going to put people in seats. But this is still very much like a historical retelling of, like, life in the 1930s, 20s, Mississippi during this time.
Wouldn't it be a wonderful thing if what factored into Preacher Boy's decision is that he saw this, like, his mom, who was just immediately silenced when he stumbled into that church. Tried to reach out for him. Dad told her to sit down. And he had just come from this terrible thing that happened, but had these, rich, multidimensional women that, we've been talking about during this whole podcast. And what if that was a factor in his decision that the world that he wanted to be in was not a world of mamas, but a world of Mary Pearlines, Annies, and Graces.
Yeah, I like that.
Because he chose, right? I mean, he chose and kept choosing. That must have been hard, because, like, to your point, that he had a good relationship with his siblings, with his mother, and he had to leave all of that behind.
And he named the bar Pearline. He didn't name it Mama.
Yeah, so I was looking at it from the perspective of, and thank you for this perspective, Em. That too many people had sacrificed it, lost their
That's true.
lives for his gift. And there's no way in the world he was going to smother it in that shotgun shot.
Even though one of them had wished that he did and begged him to let it go.
And it's interesting that the exact kind of community that was it Stack that was telling him to join, the all black community, black owned businesses. I mean, I'm sure like a lot of us thought when as Stack was describing that is those were the exact towns that, got burned down. And that's a fate that perhaps was avoided as well, right?
And I
But to
think,
think,
oh, I'm sorry.
no, go ahead.
I was just saying to think like how Smoke and Stack's lives would have been different if they had been accepted by those communities too, because weren't they turned away?
That's what I was
So
gonna
they
say.
weren't
His
perfect
reputation.
either.
That's what I was gonna say, that he wouldn't have fit in there either.
Which apparently he knew.
That's a rare and deep knowing. When you know what your gift is, your gift and purpose, you know it that young in life. And he knew it before the tragedy. Well, my sisters, this has been a wonderful conversation. I do want to take just a few minutes to address my last and most important question, which is about self-love and self-care. And, did you see where these women embodied self-love, and did you see where they practiced self-care?
Yeah, I feel like Annie showed us that by holding up the ancestors, having the deep ancestral wisdom, the hoodoo work that she did, the way she lived, the way she loved, the way she allowed herself to be loved. Because he also left her too after her child died. And she kind of, right, she still protected him with the mojo bag through the war and allowed herself to still be vulnerable. Ow. Scratch, mommy.
I would say Mary for sure, her act of self-love was, standing up for herself, speaking up for herself, like holding the men in her life accountable. She never backed down to anyone who tried to disrespect her. Especially, with her mother gone, like she again, don't know who her husband is, but you can only rely on yourself to take care of yourself in that moment. And so I really commended her for, having those really difficult conversations. I'm sure feeling all the emotions she felt, reconnecting with this person who really hurt her. And rather than, run away or shy away from it, she challenged it head on each time and held him accountable for his actions.
I would say, Annie, for the same reasons that Zoe said, and also, in that final choice that she made, that, for her to be in full possession of her own soul, and if she had to live like for only a few moments, she was going to honor her values as opposed to choose survival at any cost. And sometimes I think that's just maybe the most radical version of self-care.
Yeah. I also wonder about the treatment, the sort of the respect that she got in the community, but also the other side of that, with it being, I mean, I know how spiritualists are treated like now in 2025. So I can't imagine what the treatment was like for her then. I just don't know. I mean, maybe it was the kind of thing where we come and we get the services from you, and then there are certain things you can't go to. I don't know. I don't know what the treatment was. Was she revered? Was she feared? Was it some of both? But the fact that she lived her truth anyway and made a living from it, it seemed like she had a little house. So her dedication to, yeah, her craft and her, like you said, her values.
Yeah, I think in very different ways. It was obvious that all of these women loved themselves and took care of themselves
True.
as a norm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't show up that night trying to figure out, oh, how do I take care of my in this situation?
Right?
They had experience loving themselves and taking care of themselves. The hard decisions they had to make and the sacrifices that every choice, it, nothing was for nothing was new to them.
Hmm.
They knew how to roll.
Can we also talk about the way people kind of got in line when Annie spoke, when she finally was like, this isn't a haint, this is a vampire? And nobody was like, well, how you do? Like, if she posted that on Instagram today, she'd get a million questions about how she know what she knows and did she do her research and blah, blah, blah. They were just like, oh yeah, she knows what she's talking about. Yeah, we're gonna just eat the garlic.
Right.
We're just gonna listen to this black woman. Cause
That's
she's the
the
talking
magical
about.
emphasis.
What'd you
Yep.
say?
Like that's the magical realism of it all. Like they just got information and got information like she knew what she was talking about.
Immediately.
Absolutely.
Immediately.
But also, what other choice did they have? I mean, so you can either do this and maybe it'll work and maybe it won't, or do nothing.
But that's a choice, but doing
That
nothing
is
is a choice.
choice. And folks have made that choice.
Yeah.
And I think it's also because Smoke trusted her. And if he, because he, I think he was the only one who, publicly, visibly challenged her, especially when it came to Stack about, him being dead or not. But I think you could see that he trusted her, like, especially with the mojo bag. Like, and I just wonder, if he didn't trust her, would that have been a turning point as well.
And they were gone for 7 years.
Yeah.
And she was still making a living doing her thing.
Yeah.
And so I think, yeah, there pro people probably talked about her behind her back and was the first to be on her step when
I
something
think
was.
so. I think that's what I was trying to get to. And she was a cook too, right? Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So, is there anything that we think is a takeaway for what for Black women from these women in this story?
What comes to mind for me is creativity. Not just in art, but just living a creative, like creating the life you want. I think that what we saw, what Ryan brought to life, the history that's already been made for this film, I think is it came from his imagination, a lot of it. I think that we need to just believe in our imagination and our visions and our magic. I think it's happening. I see it happening a lot. I think we can go further. Yeah, I think we could go further with our imagination and with our creativity and the stories that we tell ourselves. I think that, yeah, we might want to start telling some new stories that aren't old and tired about who we are, about our experiences, about what's possible for us. I think that, yeah, even I think it's critical for this time for us to start visioning and living into a new, more exciting reality.
I think we also got a glimpse of what freedom can look like, and how that freedom is rooted in community and in dancing and in music. I was reading an article the other day about this DJ and how she said, she makes music, and sometimes her friends say, I know you're going through a hard time, but we just need to go to the club. And so how that's just always been a space for us to just find freedom and connection with each other despite everything that's going on. Sometimes you just gotta dance. And whatever that looks like, that's okay. And so just with that, just remembering community, remembering music, connection, dancing, just moving your body, and how that relates to just feeling the most free. And it doesn't relate to, spending money.
All of that resonates with me, what both of y'all have said, and I think this discussion in itself, the takeaway for me is the vision and power that we have in being able to pull wisdom and insight from something, even if it's not for us, right? This movie was for Black folks, but I don't know if it was, fully for Black women. But these kind of conversations is how, we found a way to make it our own and make it relevant to us.
Absolutely. Resonate with everything you all have said. Every t all 4 times I see the movie, and Sammy says to Stack, basically, this was the best day of my life, wasn't it? Was it that for you? And every time the thing just tears me up, because their woman day moment of freedom. And for me, it just feels like, yep, that was my life, or my black community's life on screen. And yep, we got freedom one day for a half day and little bitty space and time. But that little bitty space and time, the freedom that we experience when they do the flashback It's them riding together in the car and singing together. It's getting the house together for the party, and it's the dancing, and it's the seeing people that you haven't seen in years. It was simple things that made them say that was the best day of our lives. In some ways, it's sad that that's the best. We're 30 years old and this is the best day, but it's so wonderful at the same time that it was the simple things that made this the best day of our lives. We saw the sun go down. I was with my brother. We sang. Oh my God, we got together with people we hadn't seen in years. We created something together, and then we partied. We partied, and for me, it's like those are the simple things, Black folk. It's the simple things in life that really make life magnificent and wonderful. The chasing of shit that we chase today and capitalism and all that stuff is just a distraction. And if we could get to a place where we prioritize the simple things in life that capitalism and the president and his people can't take away. They can't take away joy. They can't take away relationship. They can't take away friendship. They can't take away the beautiful things, watching the sunset together and making music and being creative together. They can't take that away. Some things they can't take away from us. And those are the things that really create, going back to Zoe's point, I think that the creativity is where the freedom flows. I think that's where we birth freedom, is from actually allowing ourselves to be creative. When we allow ourselves to be the creative beings that we are, I think that's when we experience our greatest freedom. And so yeah, I just feel like, if we could just get that, if we could prioritize our creativity and that relationship. Those two things, being together, being in relationship, and being creative. Oh my God, we could experience freedom several times a day, every day. Regardless to what the systems may be doing, we could still experience that freedom. So I was already on track, but I'm really on track even more so now. I'm like, every day I'm gonna be free. Every day. I don't care how much money I got in the bank. I don't care about all that. I'm gonna do the things that make me feel free. Yeah. And so I hope all of us, I mean all the Black people that saw this movie, that's my hope, that everybody, if they don't take nothing else away, that they walk away with, shit, it takes the very some simple things for me to be free, to be free together. This last 2 hours was freedom. Thank you, my sisters and my daughter.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Till the next time.